This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
We move on to the fourth of the 613 life principles, so there are only 609 to go. Sorry? What are the two different ways?
There's some people, you know, the Rambam has this 613 and the Ramban has this.
Can you run through them? The 613 of the Rambam, 613 of the Rambam. And the fourth one, according to both the Rambam and the Ramban and everybody else, is the first mitzvah that appears in the book of Exodus and the book of Shemos. So we have three mitzvahs in the book of Bereishis, the book of Genesis. There were only three mitzvahs, apart from the seven Noahide laws, which we haven't touched yet. And the fourth mitzvah is the first one given to the people of Israel. The first three mitzvahs were given before the nation was formed. The fourth one, first in the book of Exodus, is the first mitzvah given to the nation as a whole. And that is the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh. So here we have the verse that introduces the first national mitzvah, where God says to Moshe and Aaron, still in the land of Egypt, saying, HaChodesh hazeh lochem Rosh Chodoshim. He points out to the moon at the moment of its birth, of the birth of the new moon, and he says, this moon, are there two ways of reading the verse, this moon or this month. This moon, meaning when you see the moon in this particular form, just that very first cut of Rosh Chodesh, that is Rosh Chodoshim. You should know that that's the moment of Rosh Chodesh. So according to that meaning, God is defining the moment of the beginning of the month. Or HaChodesh Hazeh, this month of Nisan, this month that you're coming out of Egypt, shall be the first of the month of the year. Leaving aside the second dimension of meaning, because that's not a mitzvah, that's just stating a fact of counting. It's not one of the 613 mitzvahs. What is the fourth of the 613 mitzvahs is the mitzvah of declaring Rosh Chodesh, the observing of Rosh Chodesh, the creation of Rosh Chodesh, of the new moon, the beginning of the month. So then what God is saying is, HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem, this, when the moon appears in this particular form, at the very beginning of its new cycle, that is for you Rosh Chodesh. Rishon hu lochem, it shall be the beginning for you. It shall be the first or the beginning of the month for you. L'chodshei hashono, for the year, for the months of the year. And in that very verse, we have a duality. And we have perhaps the most important principle, the life principle that we're going to extract from this mitzvah. The duality is in the word Chodesh and the word Shona. This month shall be for you the first month of the year. But the word for month is Chodesh and the word for year is Shona. And those two words have opposite meanings. Chodesh comes from the word Chadash, which means new. Renewal, rejuvenated. And shono comes from l'shanos, means cyclical, repetitious. So we have in that same verse a dimension of monotonous repetition. Shana, that's what Mishnah comes from. The shano, to go over your Mishnah. It's almost a monotonous process of just learning the facts over and over and over again. L'shano, we talk about l'shano, which means to learn. To learn from something which already exists. To repeat something which is already there, to re-experience something which has already happened. That's the word shono. That's the year. And there's the word chodesh, which is everything that is not shono, which is everything that is not repetition, which is everything that is not old and predictable and boring. But it's chodesh, it's new, it's vital, it's dynamic. So we have a dynamic dimension and we have a static dimension. Chodesh and shono. But what's important, the life principle that we're talking about here, is not just the duality, not the fact that you have Chodesh and you have Shono, but what's important is the synchronization of Chodesh with Shono. And we see that in the Rambam. Because when the Rambam states this law, he says the following. In the opening of the section on Kiddush HaChodesh, the Rambam says, Chodshei Hashono, the months of the year, Heim Chodshei Halavono, are the months of the moon, lunar months. Sheneemar, as it says, Oilas Chodesh V'Chodsho, V'Neemar HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodoshim. Says that the sacrifice that you bring each new moon, and it says this chodesh is for you the beginning of the month, the verse that we've just read. Koch omru chachomim, the rabbis interpret that as meaning her allo hakadosh baruch hu Moshe b'mare hanavua demus levona. God revealed to Moshe in a vision of prophecy what the moon looks like at the moment of its birth. V'omar lo, and he said kozera a. See this, the Kadesh, and declare the new moon. Sanctify the month. There's another whole theme there which we'll come to a little bit later. But what we see here is the idea of watch out, there's no moon. Watch, and then all of a sudden you'll see this tiny little sliver of a moon appearing. That's the moment of Rosh Chodesh. V'hashonim sh'onu mechashvim. Now, of course, being able to identify the exact moment of Rosh Chodesh is very important, because if the exact moment falls just before a sunset or just after a sunset, determines the whole calendar for that month and for successive months too. So whether, let us say we're talking about Rosh Chodesh Nisan, if Rosh Chodesh Nisan falls just before sunset, Pesach will be on one day. If it falls just after sunset, Pesach will be on the next day, because it's the 15th day of the month. So it now depends which is the first day of the month. So you've got to know exactly what moment the new moon is, so as to know what day the new moon fits into, so that you can calculate exactly when the Yom Tov occurs. So everything depends. And imagine if you get it wrong. Imagine if you time it incorrectly, then you'll have everybody eating matzah on the wrong day. On the day that it's really Pesach, they won't be eating matzah. On the day that it isn't Pesach, they will be eating matzah. If it's a day late, imagine that. We would all be eating chometz on the first day of Pesach. So it becomes very crucial to be able to know exactly when the new moon is, so that you can determine when the beginning of that month starts, and therefore you can determine the rest of the month. Then the Rambam goes on to say, V'hashonim sh'onu mechashvim, but the years that we calculate, sh'ono, hem shnei hachama. Those are the years of the sun, solar years. As it says the Rambam, Shemur es chodesh he'oviv. When it comes to the laws of Pesach, the Torah says, observe the month of the spring. And we know seasons, of course, are determined by the solar year, not by the lunar year. So by saying, observe Pesach in the spring, God is telling us that the annual cycle, the yearly cycle, is solar. The monthly cycle is lunar. V'kama yisero shnas hachama or shnas halavono? And how much longer is a solar year than a lunar year? Korov me'echad asor yom. It's virtually 11 days. Lefichach kashi yiskabetz min ha'tosefes hazois kamo shloshim yom. V'pochus ma'ato, yesu ma'at. So when the 11 days that you lose by using 12 lunar months, now you're 12 days behind, you're 11 days behind the solar year. That's why if your Jewish birthday falls out on the the 11th of January this year, your Jewish birthday next year will be on the 1st of January, and a year later it will be on the 19th of December, and so it'll go. It'll always be 11 days earlier. If we keep on doing that, it won't take very long before Pesach is no longer in the spring. Therefore, when we've gathered up about 30 days of these 11 days, that means every 3 years or so, every 2 or 3 years, we add an additional month, making that month, that year, a 13 lunar month year, and that's called a leap year. Because the year cannot be exactly 12 months. And so you can't have a year as 12 months and 11 days. שנאמר לחודשי השונה, חודשים אטומיינה לשונה ואין אטומיינה יומים. Because our verse that we just read tonight says, these are the months of the year. That means a year is made up of units of months, not of units of days. So if the year was made up of units of days, so for example, the solar year is made up of 365 and a quarter days. That's what the solar year is. It's not made up of 12 months. Once you have the 365 day cycle, they divide that into 12 units, and that's a month. But what constitutes a solar year is 365 days. That's the constant. What constitutes a lunar year is 12 months. But 12 months leaves us unsynchronized with the solar year. And here's where the important part of this verse comes, and we're going to talk about three different synchronizations that revolve around this mitzvah. And what we're talking about here in this mitzvah of time, and this is one of the really important time mitzvahs. What are some of the other time mitzvahs? We've got Rosh Chodesh, we've got Shabbos is a kind of a time mitzvah, all the Yom Tovs are time mitzvahs. We have certain mitzvahs that relate to the time dimension, that teach us something about time, that focus us on different elements of time. The life principle of Rosh Chodesh is the synchronization of different time units. Because at the end of the day, the whole purpose of time is to synchronize. If I say I'll meet you at 11 o'clock at Starbucks, and your watch and my watch aren't synchronized, we won't meet each other at all. Time only works if there's synchronization. And that's part of the mitzvah over here, the idea of being in sync. The idea of using timing to be in sync. If you watch an orchestra playing, or you watch two pianists playing, I watched an amazing piano recital yesterday, two pianists playing in perfect sync. How do they do it? How do they know? And playing at such a speed and with such a tempo and with such passion and perfect sync. What are they doing? It's their timing. All they want to make sure is that their timing is sync. Timing is what allows us to synchronize our lives, our activities, with one another, with the society, with the rhythm of the world. We're talking time is not just about an artificial thing, the hands moving around a watch. The watch is merely an instrument of synchronization. That's all it is. The watch is not the measure of time. Time is measured by the movement of the sun. Time is measured by the movement of the moon. Time is measured by natural functions, not by hands moving around a clock. The hands moving around a clock are simply, the clock is an artificial instrument to assist people to synchronize their times. But the idea of being in sync, the idea of creating synchronization, goes beyond just two people synchronizing their times. It goes into the whole issue of synchronizing lives. That's what a relationship is, when two people are in harmony. What are we saying? What are they? They're in sync. They're able to synchronize with one another. Their rhythms are in sync. They're able to tune into one another. Their moods and their movements are in tune with one another. The capacity to synchronize is the most important dimension of interaction. If one is relating to other people, or one is relating to nature, or one is relating to a community, or one is relating to a calendar, or one is relating to a religion, whatever it is, the connection between you and that which is outside you is the capacity to synchronize a rhythm, to detect that rhythm, to detect your own rhythm, to bring the two into synchronization, and to operate in harmony until you want to move into some other area of synchronization. So the life principle of the laws of Rosh Chodesh is the principle of synchronization rather than just the principle of time, and we're going to look at three areas of synchronization. Here's the first area of synchronization, and that is the solar year with the lunar year. Unlike any other calendar system, the Ibn Ezra makes the point and says, Ein la levona shona klal. You should realize, says the Ibn Ezra, the moon has no year. There's no such thing as a lunar year, really. The moon measures a month. The moon doesn't measure a year. Kasher ein la shemesh chodesh klal. Just as the sun doesn't have a month. The sun goes round the world once a year. The world goes round the sun once a year. And you can divide that into 12, you can divide that into 10, you can divide that into 20, you can divide it into whatever you want. It's artificial. There is no natural unit of month in the solar system. There is no natural unit of year in the lunar system. A year could be 20 months, it could be 50 months, it could be 3 months, whatever you want it to be. It doesn't make any difference. All you've got to measure in the lunar system, you've only got a measure of month, and in the solar system, you've only got a measure of year. Because in the sun, there is no hishadshus, there is no renewal. Nothing changes. as there is in the moon. And that's why it's called a chodesh. Chodesh meaning new. Uvavu shishnas ha'omim kroivo el shnas ha'chamo. And since the non-Jewish world keeps a solar year, generally, and they saw that more or less that the moon has 12 renewals approximately in a year, give or take 11 days. So they decided, let's divide the year into 12 and make the year 12 months. Each month will be 30 and a half days. And they call each one a month, but it's not really a month, the secular month. But it's similar to a month, it approximates a month. Gama Yishmaelim in the Muslim world, the Yishmaelim, Bavushim Ma'adeim Tuluyim Bimechod Shalavona, they follow the lunar year. Utchila Sachvedish Melero Yishalavona, and they start the month every time they see a new moon. Vero Uki Yudbe Sachvedish Yesh Bishnat Achama, they saw that there are approximately 12 months in a year. Loimotsu Cheshbon Yosekorov Mizer, so they said, let's make our year 12 months. So both are estimates. The Western world fixes on the year, 365 days, and estimates the month, and the Muslim world fixes on the month and estimates the year. But in both cases there is inaccuracy. Is there a way of resolving the accuracy? There isn't, it would seem. Because if you're going to follow the solar year, and you're going to want 12 months, you're going to be 11 days short. You're going to have 11 days too many. If you're going to follow the lunar year and you want approximately a 365 day year, you're going to be 11 days short. What can you do about it? Nevertheless, says the Torah here, our obligation is, Achodesh Hazeh Lochem, Rosh Chodoshim, while your month has to be determined by this new moon, it's got to count as month Lechod Sheh Hashonah. You've also got to synchronize it with the year and keep the Yom Tovs in their seasonal, in their correct seasonal positions, which means every 2 or 3 years you've got to adjust your lunar years so as to synchronize them with the solar year and not allow yourself to get out of sync in the, between the lunar and the solar systems. And what's the principle? We've spoken about it once before. The difference between the solar and the lunar. And we said that you see in the cultures of the world the struggle between and the pendulum swinging between an adherence to that which is objective and quantifiable and that which is intuitive and subjective. And you'll find even in recent times a pendulum move, a very scientific age in the 1940s and the 1950s, probably a very subjective age in the 1920s, the beginning of Impressionism, even going earlier than that, the beginning of Impressionism, various different theories as to what caused that whole swing at that particular time. The theory I think is most accurate was the discovery of the camera. Because once the camera was able to do what artists used to do, and could do it better than artists, to be able to record reality as it really is, artists had to redefine themselves. There was no point anymore in them painting portraits and painting still lives and painting all the things that they used to paint, whereas you could get cameras to do it far more accurately. And so the beginning of the subjective artistic movement started in saying, we have to bring to bear on reality a dimension that a camera cannot capture. And you began to develop the persona of the artist being imposed in his interpretation of reality, and the use of light and the interpretation of light and the movement of light and of color, things the cameras couldn't do. And that affected literature and that affected philosophy. The existential philosophy was a result of that. All of the tendency towards that which was subjective. And that ushered in science, relativity. Relativity was mind-blowing, not just in terms of the thesis, in terms of the physical discovery of what it meant, but the concept, the outlook. To talk about relativity in the field of science was apikursis. What does relativity mean? It's non-scientific. The whole idea of science was it's non-relative, that it's objective, that it's absolute. And yet that began the whole area of relativity. Things aren't absolute, things are relative. That you can only measure things in relationship to other things. They are not objective measurements. And that led into a whole non-religious or anti-religious movement of questioning, is there any such thing as an absolute? And all the crazy years then of the 1920s until the Second World War, when all of a sudden objective reality started coming back again. There is such a thing as people killing each other, people destroying each other. The world comes down with a bump, and then you've got the 1940s and the 1950s back to science, back to that which is rational, back to that which is analytical. And then comes the 1960s, and back again to the subjective. And so there's the movement backwards and forwards in civilization trying to find its place between the sense that a whole lot of reality is dependent on the intuitive subjective part of the human being, and yet you can't ignore the objective part. And how do you align the two? Rosh Chodesh is about learning to align the two. Rosh Chodesh is the understanding that in the new moon, we're looking at something that is always changing, it's something that is intuitive, it's non-measurable. So as I pointed out before, if I was to say to you tonight, if you were to go outside, where would the moon be? What would it look like? And what stage of its phase would it be? There's probably not anybody in the room who could answer that question. We would have to go outside, we would have to look around, find it or not find it, and see it. Probably nobody could actually say where it is. It's intuitive. You've actually got to go. If you're not in touch with it, you can't work it out. It's very difficult to calculate where the moon is. Unless you have an instrument, you have one of these watches that calculates it, you can't figure it out. But any time of the day, I could say to you, where would the sun be right now? And how bright would it be? You would know exactly where to look for it. You would know exactly where it is. And probably if I said, where is it going to set tonight? You would be able to point more or less exactly where it's going to set, which is very close to where it set last night. Where is it going to rise? It's going to rise here. With the sun, there is no need for a dependency on intuition. There are objective criteria, you know where it is, it's going to be there, it's the same place it was yesterday, more or less. It's totally measurable, it's completely predictable. The moon, not so. The moon is about Chodesh. The moon is, it's always in a different place, it always looks different. It looked one thing yesterday, it's going to look different tonight, it's going to look different tomorrow night. Sometimes it disappears altogether, sometimes a part of the night it's not there, for different parts of the night it is there. It's always confounding us. We can never, that's the mystery of the moon. Much more mysterious object than the sun. And God says, when it comes to relating to reality, and time is our means, rhythm is our way of relating to reality, rhythm is our way of synchronizing with reality, there are two processes that need to be taking place simultaneously. Synchronizing with the subjective, synchronizing with the objective, and synchronizing the subjective with the objective. So that you can bring the two into alignment. When the two are in alignment, then you're dealing with reality. But let's go one step further, and we find that even in the laws of Rosh Chodesh itself, there are these two dimensions. So now we're saying in the solar system there's the predictable and the objective, the measurable. The lunar system, it's unpredictable, not measurable, subjective. Now let's go into the lunar system. Leave the sun aside for a moment. Let's go into the lunar system. In the laws of Rosh Chodesh, there are there too principles of predictability versus uncertainty. Have a look at this law. How do we work out and how do we operate with Rosh Chodesh? It's done differently today to the way it was done in the time of the temple. The Rambam first lays it down as it is in the time of the temple. Based in Mechashvin Becheshbonos, the Based in calculates, using various logarithms and calculations, Keder Shemechashvin Astignin, as the astronomers work it out, Sheyodim Mekomes HaKechovim Umahalchon, Vechochim Umedaknikim Ad Sheyedim Efshar Sheyere HaReach Bizmanah. Just as the astronomers can work out exactly where a particular star or constellation is at a given moment, and they can tell you where it will be at a given moment, and it's completely predictable. You've been to a planetarium, they can just speed up the whole process, and they can stop it at any given date, any year, 100, 200, 300 years ahead or back, and they can set the sky exactly as it would be at that particular moment and that particular date. It's completely programmable, exactly where each constellation is going to be in the sky at any given time. So the movements of the moon are completely programmable. Although it appears to us unpredictable, we don't know where the moon will be and we can't figure it out. The same way as we wouldn't know where the stars were. If I was to say to you, where is Orion tonight? You also wouldn't know unless you're an astronomer. You'd have to go around and you have to look for Orion's belt and you'll figure it out and you'll see it and there it is. But if you're not an astronomer, you wouldn't know offhand if I said tonight, when the shiur's over, 9 o'clock tonight, 9:30 tonight, where will I find the constellation of Orion? Who would know that if you haven't studied it? So it is with the moon. You don't know it because you haven't studied it. But if you would study it and calculate it, you would know exactly where the moon is, just as you would know exactly where any constellation is. And the Chachomim used to work it out. The Bezin used to have to calculate exactly when Rosh Chodesh ought to be computed ahead. They should know whether the moon could appear on the 30th day or not. It can only appear on one of 2 days. If Rosh Chodesh was on day 1, the next Rosh Chodesh is either on day 30 or on day 31. It can only be on one of those two. So they've just got to figure out, could it be on day 30? Im yedu she'efsha she'yireh yoshvinu metzapim le'edim kol hayom kulo. If they know that the moon could appear on day 30, then they wait for witnesses to come. Shuyom Shloshim, they wait for day 30. In Bo Edim, if witnesses come and they examine the witnesses and they question them and they find they're telling the truth, then they declare that as the new moon. So they have worked out that the new moon ought to be on day 30. They wait for witnesses. Witnesses come, they question the witnesses and they say, right, today is Rosh Chodesh. Vim Loi Nireva, Loi Bo Edim. What happens if they figured out that it ought to be day 30, but no witnesses come? Mashlimim Shloshim B'yach Chodesh Me'uba. Then they do not declare it Rosh Chodesh. They declare the next day Rosh Chodesh, even though they've calculated that it could be that day. V'im Yedu B'cheshbon She'yefshar She'yiroi. And if they've calculated that it cannot be the 30th day of this month, that the new moon will definitely be on day 31, and witnesses come and they say, we saw the new moon on day 30, they declare those witnesses as false. That means the Chachomim are sufficiently reliant on their own calculation to declare a witness false who comes to say that they saw the moon on day 30 when they've calculated it can't be. That means that the Chachomim's calculation is foolproof. They know how to calculate. There's a mathematical logarithm. They can work it out. They know exactly when it is. And they don't need anybody to see it. So why are we told that the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh requires visual sighting, if it can be worked out scientifically? And it's quite clear from the Rambam that you need both of them. As the Perush on the Rambam says, that clearly the calculation alone is not sufficient and visual sighting is not sufficient. And why is that? Because once again we have here the synchronization of the measurable and the absolute with the subjective and the intuitive. God says, not only must you synchronize the sun with the moon, but even with the moon itself there's a requirement that you synchronize the calculative capacity with the visual. Don't allow yourself to withdraw into a world that is determined by mathematical calculation, because you're not a computer. However, don't allow yourself to function in a world that is not checked by mathematical calculation, because you cannot be accurate if you're only functioning subjectively. Synchronize the two. If you've calculated that something is right, and you intuit that it's right, then you know that it's right. If you've calculated that it's right, and you don't intuit, or you intuit and you don't calculate, you'd better do some more checking. But there's a need to synchronize the two together. And so we find that there is in Rosh Chodesh a predictive element where one can predict when Rosh Chodesh will be. And there is an intuitive element to it, where you actually see the new moon. But what is the difference between the predictability of the solar and the predictability of the lunar? So I said to you, if I were to say to you, where will the sun rise tomorrow morning? You could go outside and you could point and you say, that's where it's going to rise. Where will it set? That's where it's going to set. Where will it be at 11 o'clock? It will be there. You know. If I were to say the same about the moon, you don't know. But you could calculate the moon, and that's the difference. The sun, every lay person, every child knows. It is so intuitive that there is lay knowledge, lay understanding. An ordinary person knows where the sun will be. For the moon, it's intellectual. You've got to calculate it. It's not intuitive at all. It has to be calculated. Yes, you can predict the moon's behavior if you go through a process of mental calculation. You cannot predict it intuitively. It doesn't follow the intuition, but it does follow calculation. So the Chachomim, the scholars who know the methods of calculation, can figure out where the moon is supposed to be. They can figure out when Rosh Chodesh is supposed to be. What about the ordinary man in the street? He has to see the new moon. And here we have another synchronization. What do we have to synchronize? The calculations of the scholars with the visions of the ordinary person. So Rosh Chodesh is not just about the ordinary person seeing Rosh Chodesh. How does it work with Shabbos? You don't have to go to a Beis Din to find out when Shabbos is. The Beis Din, the scholars, don't have to declare today is Shabbos. Anybody works out, you just count from Rosh Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, tomorrow Shabbos, you know it, that's it, every child knows. But Rosh Chodesh doesn't work like that. Rosh Chodesh is a partnership between the lay and the scholar, between the intellectual analysis and the ordinary person's intuition. The ordinary person sees the moon, comes to Beis Din, tells Beis Din, I saw the moon. Beis Din check that up against the calculation. The calculation and the intuition match. They declare Rosh Chodesh. That's the synchronization that has to take place. It's interesting though, just look at the various possibilities here. If the scholars have calculated that it can be on the 30th, but there are no witnesses, then the calculation is set aside and it's not Rosh Chodesh. If they calculate that it is going to be on the 30th and there are no witnesses, we set it aside. If it's calculated that it cannot be on the 30th and witnesses say we saw the new moon, we say you're liars. Cannot be. We're confident in our calculation. Because we need both. Only when the calculation and the witnesses synchronize. What about if the Chachomim have worked out that it can only be on the 31st day and no witnesses come on the 30th day? Do we need witnesses for the 31st day? No, we don't. So there are actually three possibilities. The one is, I have the calculation for the 30th day but no witnesses. I have witnesses for the 30th day but no calculation. In both cases, no Rosh Chodesh. However, the 31st day, if I have calculation, I don't need witnesses. Says the Rambam, and the law is that way. And here we have three levels of knowledge. And that is, calculation creates possibility. If I were to say to you, you know, whenever you see the new moon, that will be Rosh Chodesh. The chances are, you wouldn't know when to look and where to look. But if I said to you, I've worked out that the new moon ought to come tonight, and that's kind of where it's going to come. Let's see who sees it first. The chances are you'll see it at its inception. So if you operate with no calculation, the possibilities are so infinite that discovery eludes you. When there is calculation, the possibility of discovery is much greater. There are many, many examples of that. One example I think I mentioned to you years ago, when I was learning how to check the knife of a shochet. The knife of a shochet has to be perfectly sharp and absolutely smooth. And it requires enormous sensitivity in the tip of the fingernail to be able to detect the flaw in the knife. And one has to learn that. You have to run your fingernail along the knife, and if you can detect the slightest flaw in the knife may not be used for the slaughtering process. And when I was studying it, and was at the point where I ought to have known these things already, a shochet was training me and he gave me his knife and he says, do you think the knife is okay? And I'd already done this hundreds of times, so I was quite confident and I felt the knife. I said, it's beautiful, one of the smoothest knives I've ever felt. He says, try it again. I tried it again and I said, it's absolutely perfect. He said, are you sure it's perfect? So now I'm already beginning to think that maybe there's a catch. And I go over it more carefully. I said, I'm sure it's perfect. He says, okay, it isn't perfect. It may not be used. However, you're a rabbi already, he says to me. If you tell me to use it, I'll use it. And all the people who buy my food will be eating treif. And it'll be on your head. So check it out once more. And immediately I found it. What was the difference? When you know something is there, you just have to find out where it is. It's much easier than when you don't know whether it's there or not. To search for discovery where you don't know the range of possibilities denies the opportunity for discovery. Very often we need to be told something is there, just find it. You need to believe it's there, just find it. Imagine if we went mining for gold. We didn't know where it was. We just knew somewhere in the earth there is gold. What chance would there ever be of finding it? No chance. But geologists are able to survey and they're able to use various instruments and they're able to say, it's somewhere around here, we know that for sure. We don't know exactly where, we don't know exactly how deep, but it's around here, go for it. Then the people come and they start and they find it. And so it is with diamonds, so it is with anything. If you know that something ought to be in a particular place, you know where to find it. It's something like,
And if you go into a bookshop and there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books you've never heard of, and you pick a book up and you page through it a little bit, you put it down, you pick another one up, you page through it a little bit, you don't know what you're looking at. And you don't buy the book, and then you hear somebody who really understands these things says, "Oh, there's a new book that's come out. It's unbelievable." And you think, "Oh my goodness, I was in the bookshop and I looked at it. I didn't know it was unbelievable, so I didn't buy it." But if somebody tells you this particular author is really great, you go looking for it, you find it, you read the pages with a different kind of understanding, you read it expecting to find something. When you go into a situation expecting to find, you search, and there's a good chance you'll find. If you go into a situation not knowing whether you're going to find anything at all or not, the chances are you'll miss. And that's the role of calculation versus intuition. You use your intuition to discover something which you've calculated ought to be there. You figured out that there should be, it makes sense that something should be here, or it makes sense that something shouldn't be here. Now go and find it. It appears that there's something here. Were you dealing with people, or you're dealing with situations, or you're dealing with texts, or you're dealing with knowledge? There's something that you figured out that ought to be here, some piece of wisdom, or some insight, or some experience, or some emotion. And then you go searching for it, you might find it. It might be possible. That's part of why a reputation is important. Why presentation is important. If a person is just speaking, you walk right past him. If somebody says that person you just walked right past speaking happens to be the world's greatest expert on X, Y, or Z, and it's an area that you're interested in, what do you do? Well, right back and listen. Well, why didn't you listen when you walked right past? Because you didn't discern. It's not that easy to discern something when you're not expecting anything at all. If you have some kind of expectation, you turn on your discernment, and then you're able to experience things that you didn't know before. I play a piece of music to you and I say, this music is exceptionally great music. And you listen to it, and you listen to it over and over again. You try and discern the greatness. Maybe you will. But if I didn't tell you anything about it, it was just on the radio as you were moving past, you wouldn't determine the greatness of it necessarily, unless you really happen to understand music very, very well. We lose opportunities for the discovery of greatness when we don't expect greatness to exist. And sometimes we have to be able to calculate the possibilities before we intuit the reality. And that's the message in the Rosh Chodesh concept. That there is a need for calculation. The Chachamim have to work out. We figure the new moon should be on the 30th day, and that's more or less where it should be. Now witnesses, go and look for it. Somebody come and tell us you found it. And when there's the finding of it, and we're able to put together the visual perception, the vision of the reality, with the mental calculation, we've synchronized those two worlds, the scientific objective world with the subjective intuitive world, synchronized the two, that's the Rosh Chodesh. But when it comes to the 31st day, when you know that Rosh Chodesh isn't on the 30th and cannot be, you don't need witnesses to say you saw it on the 31st. Because there is a third kind of knowledge. There is calculative knowledge. I calculate that something ought to be. There is intuitive knowledge. I see it. I feel it. I touch it. I smell it. And then there's a third one where it's knowledge. I know. I know for sure. If I know for sure, I don't need intuition and I don't need calculation. Knowledge doesn't need to be affirmed by either, if there's absolute knowledge. So if I know Rosh Chodesh is not on the 30th day, there's no doubt about it being on the 31st day. I don't need any witnesses. That's called knowledge. If I've calculated it's on the 30th day, that's a calculation. That's not knowledge. If I see it, that's intuition. If I know that it's not on the 30th day, then it's clearly on the 31st day, and that's certainty. Knowledge determines certainty, whereas calculation creates possibility. And those are two different things. We can only create possibility with calculation. We cannot see reality. We cannot determine reality with a calculation. We can only see possibilities. This might be, now go and discover it, now go and find it. And the third area of synchronization is just in the image of the new moon. It's so interesting that the image of Chidush is one of the most sterile of objects of the universe, the moon. There's hardly anything more sterile than the moon. If you want to talk about Chidush, talk about the seasons on Earth, talk about blossoms, talk about springtime. Talk about night and day. There are all sorts of images of Chiddush where there is change. But there's hardly anything that is as sterile and as unchanging as the moon. Isn't it interesting that the moon should be the symbol of Chiddush, of Hischadshus, of renewal? Why the moon? what is it that creates the change in the moon? The one object in the sky that does change every single night doesn't ever change at all. The truth is the sun is changing. It's burning and there's spots on it that are changing. Its mass is changing. Every star is changing. Stars are born, stars are dying, stars, there's movement, there's dynamic. The one thing that never changes is the moon. And the only thing that creates the illusion of change every single day is the moon. So what are we celebrating? The illusion of change or the reality of change? The illusion of newness, of hiskachus, or reality? If it's a reality, the moon is the least renewal, least renewing of all objects in the sky. And yet in that we understand the particular kind of renewal that God wants us to focus on in this mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh. And that is not the renewal of changing objects, but the renewal of changing self. Because what makes the moon look different is only one thing, and that's we're not standing in the same position. That's all. Our relationship to the moon is different today from what it was yesterday. The moon is the same. What makes it look different is because our position vis-a-vis the moon has changed. We were in that position, now we're in that position. The way it looked yesterday is different from the way it looks today, and you're able to see the moon with new insights. You're able to see the moon with new angles. You're able to see the moon with new shades of light, something that wasn't there yesterday. And so here we have a third area of synchronization where we're looking at an object that is permanent, but a subject that is changing, and where the sense of change and the sense of renewal is not in the object, but is in the change that the individual experiences with that object. And clearly there's a place for objective renewal. There's a place for having new things. That's the whole idea of a Shechiyonu. When do you say Shechiyonu? The Broch of Shechiyonu, you don't say when you look at your suit of clothes from a new angle. The Broch of Shechiyonu, you don't say when you look at the apple from a new angle. You say Shechiyonu when it's a new season, when you haven't had apples for a long time, and for the first time you have an apple, new object. You say Shechiyonu when you buy a new suit of clothes. Say Shechiyonu when you buy some new furniture, something that's very beautiful, something that's meaningful to you that you didn't have before. So clearly we celebrate newness in the object. That's easy. To celebrate newness in the object, that's easy. Anybody can do that. The art is to be able to celebrate newness in an object that never changes. To be able to find vitality in things that don't change too. Because you change. Because we're looking at it from a different angle. And so to be able to find that in the same shachris that we say every morning, in the same kriya shema that we say twice a day, in the same Shabbos that we have every week, in the same Rosh Hashanah or Pesach or Shavuos that we have every year, in the same husband or wife that we're married to every day of our lives, to be able to find newness in those things that are constant, that's what Rosh Chodesh, that's the synchronization. To be able to keep a stability in an object and find vitality in the relationship to that object, and to be able to celebrate that vitality and synchronize the permanence and the stability of the object with an ever-changing relationship, always being in a different position, always seeing it from a different stance. That's the kind of chiddush that we're talking about. That's the kind of renewal that we're talking about. And the only way to do that is to make sure that where I was yesterday is not where I am today. Because we're surrounded with too many things that are static. The fact is a lot of our lives are routine. We do a lot of things, the same things over and over again. We do live in the same kind of environments. We do travel the same kind of journeys every day. There are relatively few things that we engage in on a daily, on a weekly basis that are entirely new experiences. But one thing that has the capacity of being a new experience is where I'm at. And if I'm sure that where I'm at is not where I was yesterday, then there is nothing in my world that looks the same as it looked yesterday. It might be the same. It's not that there's no stability, that I change everything. That's not necessary. I've changed. I'm not in the same position. I'm looking at it from a different angle. And as I'm able to look at things from a different angle, there's the idea of chidush. And for that kind of chidush, there is the idea of the noilad. When we talk about the moment of the new moon, that moment where you actually can't even see it yet. You can work it out scientifically. When the Gabbai announces, as he did this last Shabbos, the moment of Rosh Chodesh. Whenever we bench Rosh Chodesh in Shul on Shabbos every month, before doing so, we announce the moment of Rosh Chodesh over Jerusalem. So the new moon will appear over Jerusalem at so and so many hours, so and so many minutes, and so many seconds of such and such a day. That's the moment that the new moon appears. Now the truth is, if you looked up at that time, you wouldn't even see it.
because that is the astronomical moment that the angle shifts to the point where it's just about to become visible. So, and that's called the moilad, the moment of conception, the moment of birth. So the moment of birth of something new, the new thing is almost invisible. Something has been conceived, something has been born, but it's almost invisible. So how do you know that? How do you know that the moilad, going back to what we were saying earlier, if you don't know that the moon is going to appear in that particular position, on that particular night, at that particular time, what chance have you of seeing that moment? You might see it an hour later, you look up and oh, there's a moon there. But what chance is there of seeing the moment of birth if the moment is unexpected? Virtually none. It would be And that's why the Chazal say, "Ezehu chacham." The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, "What is the definition of wisdom? Haroeh es hanoilad, somebody who's able to see something which is born, because most people miss it. They see things after they're born, and the reason they miss it is because they haven't been able to anticipate it. And the reason they haven't been able to anticipate it is because they rely only on their intuition. If you rely only on your intuition, you'll only see the moon when it's there. But when it's there, you've missed the birth." It's like a person who doesn't notice that his wife is pregnant. 9 months go past and he hasn't noticed that she's pregnant. All of a sudden there's a baby crying. Fine, mazel tov, you've noticed that you have a baby in the house, but you weren't there for the birth. You missed it. Why did you miss it? Because you weren't timing. You weren't anticipating. So how could I anticipate? There wasn't a baby. I work intuitive. I didn't see any baby. All of a sudden I heard a baby crying. I knew there was a baby. But you could have calculated. You could have worked out almost to the day when it's supposed to be. You could have readied yourself. You could have made provisions so that you could be there for the birth. But that needs anticipation. And anticipation needs chokhmah. So if you live in the world of anticipation, and you don't listen out for the baby's cry, you miss the birth. If you live in the world of intuition and subjective feeling, and you don't anticipate, you miss the birth. Ezehu chokhmah. One needs wisdom to be able to synchronize the two, and that's the wisdom of Rosh Chodesh, and that's why it's given to the Beis Din, to the leaders of the nation. The mitzvah is given to Moshe and Aaron, to the leaders of the nation. This requires wisdom. The art of anticipating the birth of something that is not yet there, and synchronizing that anticipation with an intuitive experience of the moment of birth, is the art of Rosh Chodesh. And we're meant to use that not only for Rosh Chodesh, but for everything we do in our lives. To be able to think a little bit ahead, to be there at the right time. Because so much of our lives we miss, because we arrive just too late. Just too late for the special moment. Yes, we see the after effects. Yes, we're able to sense the result. But the moment of birth is something we miss, because we haven't been able to synchronize our intuition with our calculation. HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, God says, this is a mitzvah of the new moon given to you, the children of Israel, the leaders of Israel, Moshe and Aaron. Rosh Chodoshim, this is the beginning of the process of renewal. Rishon Hu Lochem, it teaches you what it means to be at first, to be at the beginning, to be there right at the front, to be at the birth of an idea. L'chodshe Hashona, that always synchronize it with the predictability of the year. Be able to intuit the month and calculate the year. Be able to bring them into sync. Be able to live with the subjective and the objective, with the intuitive and the measurable, to be able to live with that which is Chodesh, that which is lunar, and that which is Shona, which is the repetition, that which is the year. Thanks.